Scott Burnside from ESPN.com. It's a pleasure to welcome him onto the program. Welcome to the FDH Lounge, Scott.
I'm honored and pleased to be joining you. If it's a little bit noisy, we're in Montreal, a little bit of out of downtown, having some of the local fare. So if it's a little bit noisy, that's who we're experiencing some of the Montreal draft experience here.
Oh, people are getting some authenticity. That's great. We'll be able to to take that in. I want to start by asking now, the market that you see hockey in the most, you are based out of Atlanta, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, that's actually where my brother lives. I'm down there a decent amount. Lovely town. The situation with the Thrashers, it's a very interesting one with Rick Dudley in the mix here. I wonder what that potentially augurs in the time to come here because, again, he's noted for his success in the draft using high picks. The Atlanta Thrashers are nothing if not synonymous with high draft picks. So what do you see coming in the years to come?
Well, I think it's an interesting hire for Don Waddell. I mean, it's a team, you know, Don Waddell and Rick Dudley go back to the mid-'80s when Dudley actually hired Don Waddell as a player coach back in the minors. So they have a long, long history together. Rick Dudley, I think, you know, pound for pound, maybe one of the best talent evaluators in the NHL. I know he's had a couple of stints as a GM, maybe hasn't worked out as well as he would have liked, but he is a top-notch assessor of talent, and that's what Don Waddell has brought him in to do, and that's why you'll see him as, you know, he's not an assistant GM, he's an associate. You know, he's going to spend a lot of time on the road scouting both amateur and pro hockey players. You know, the Thrashers have, you know, they're a team that has struggled in large part because they've, A, failed to draft correctly, and B, failed to develop properly. I mean, they're a team that has really struggled on both ends of that equation. And as you know, in this new NHL with the salary cap, if you can't draft and develop players, your future is abysmal. And the Thrashers are just starting to get some traction. You know, they got Zach Bogosian and Brian Little, Toby Enstrom. So they have a couple of pieces in place. But Rick Dudley is going to help that process, I would think, immeasurably moving forward. They have the fourth pick on Friday night. You know, this is a team that really needs to make good choices at the draft table, and Rick Dudley is going to help them do that.
Well, you hear speculation. They tend to get thrown in the mix with some of these Sun Belt teams that are struggling in a number of ways. I know nobody's probably as bad off as Phoenix is, at least off the ice. On the ice, they're kind of promising with the young talent, but off the ice, they're having issues. But Atlanta kind of gets thrown in that mix a little bit. Tampa Bay in the years since they won the Stanley Cup. So where do you see Atlanta in that spectrum of struggling Sun Belt teams as far as the business of the game? Are they towards the worse end of the spectrum or towards the more benign end?
Well, no, I think they're in terrible shape. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they have not won one single playoff game in their franchise existence. I mean, it's inexcusable, and you know, their season ticket base reflects that. It's down to bare bones. They have ads and sponsorship issues. The future looks bleak, frankly, immediately on a financial end of things, but. You know, in terms of that team of picking up and moving out of Atlanta, I don't think it's going to happen for a number of reasons. You know, they have an ownership group, the Atlanta Spirit Group, that even though they're in, have their own internal squabbles and a court case that's been going on for a long time to determine exactly who's going to be part of that ownership group. They did make a commitment to the NHL to not discuss or, inquire into relocation for 8 years. So they have now probably 3.5 years of, you know, commitment to Atlanta. There are naming rights to Phillips Arena, which require that the Thrashers stay there or Phillips will be able to, sort of escape without having paying, which I believe, $100 million worth of naming rights outstanding there. So any kind of group that wanted to come in, you know, there was a group out of Winnipeg that was interested or inquired about moving the Atlanta Thrashers to Winnipeg within the last month or so. You know, the fact is that all those, you know, those elements would have to be built into the purchase cost, purchase price of the Atlanta Thrashers, and frankly, it's not going to happen. I just don't see them moving in the near future. Now, whether they can be successful or not is another question. I mean, it's like any of these markets. You think about Tampa and how they were a laughing stock in Tampa for a long time. Carolina struggled for a long time in Carolina to draw there. When you put a winning team on the ice in these markets, the fans show up, and all of a sudden they become, you know, an exemplary market. So I'm not sure the same thing will happen in Atlanta, but we don't know because they haven't put anything on the ice that approximates that kind of success.
You make a very good point. And again, if a team like Phoenix, you talk about low-hanging fruit, if they can't be moved, Atlanta or anybody else is going to get to hang on to their team a little bit longer. No question about that. Phoenix would be the first domino to fall, and that's not going to happen, at least on an imminent basis. As far as the season that just wrapped up, I think most would indicate that it climaxed in a very exciting fashion. I will tell you, I'm still in mourning on a personal basis, Scott, as a Red Wings fan, taking it very hard about what happened. I do want to get your impression, because it's a widespread impression, and I think not just limited to Red Wing fans, that, again, without alleging conspiracy, without putting on the tinfoil hat, it did sure seem as though Pittsburgh getting the Stanley Cup just seems to be the fondest dream of the league here, that they seem to think that Crosby and Malkin, and they think that'll be key to the resurgence, the continued resurgence, I guess we would say, of the post-lockout of the league. I kind of look at it like Detroit's a team that really moves the needle. Everybody loves them or hates them. It's close to a national franchise in that way. I almost get the sense, you know, without trying to put too much of my personal feeling into the situation, it almost seems like the league might be looking a gift horse in the mouth a little bit. You know, what they could have in Pittsburgh versus what they do have in Detroit.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, that the league has any sort of, you know, do they have a vested interest? I think they do, but I'm not sure that they, I don't want to say that they don't care, but I'm not sure that it matters to them so much. I mean, I think the matchups the last 2 years, I thought the return matchup of Detroit-Pittsburgh was compelling. Obviously, it was compelling hockey down the stretch. You know, the Red Wings continue to be the gold standard in terms of, you know, how a franchise should be run. How, you know, when we talk about the Thrashers in terms of drafting and developing, and, you know, the Red Wings never draft anywhere near the top of the draft, and yet they consistently develop top-end players, you know, that they are the gold standard. I think they'll continue to be that. It will be interesting, I think, next year. You know, it's so hard to get back to a Stanley Cup final, let alone repeat. And it'll be interesting to see both Pittsburgh and Detroit. Both will undergo, I would think, you know, fairly significant change in terms of their lineup by the time next year rolls around. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they're the kinds of team, you know, could we see a best of three? Could we see it 3 years in a row? I'm not sure that's good for the league, but it sure would be compelling drama, you know, no matter how you cut it, if those two teams met again in the final next year.
Oh, it certainly would be. And I tell you what, it's the consensus of some of the panelists on this show. I'd like to get your sense that it would seem as though the Wings might have an easier time getting back to the finals just by dint of what's there in the West. Pittsburgh's going to have to battle past Boston. Washington, if they go and shore up their defense like they should. The Rangers, if they potentially bring in Danny Heatley. It seems to me as though Pittsburgh might have the tougher road back just in terms of elite competition. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, I suppose that's true, and I do think Boston will get better. I think they're a team that maybe like Pittsburgh of last year, they're going to learn from their disappointment losing to Carolina in that seventh game in the second round. They're a very good team, and I like their goaltending and their defense. You know, if Washington, you know, do they have the answer in Semyon Varlamov in net? Again, that will be, you know, that's a question that will be answered, I think, in large part during the first 55 or 60 games of next year. It certainly doesn't seem to be Jose Theodore. And you're right, they do need to shore up the defense there. But, you know, I think it's easy now to write off the San Jose Sharks, and certainly their playoff disappointments, you know, brand them as one of the great choke artists of this, you know, sort of current NHL generation. But they are still a good hockey team. I think they're going to look pretty different next year and the second year. You know, with the new coaching system there, maybe next year is the year that they actually do it, when people have already sort of written them off. So they're a very good team. I think Anaheim is, you know, again, a team that you cannot write off. Again, they're going to look a little bit different. Will they have Chris Pronger? Will they have J.S. Chiguer? But there are, you know, there is no easy route to the Stanley Cup final. And that's, you know, to me, that's the great thing about that game. And you think about, you know, the Wings having to fend off the Ducks in the Game 7, an up-and-coming Chicago team in the Western Conference Final, and, of course, Pittsburgh knocking off Washington on the road in the Game 7 and then coming back to do what they did against Detroit. There is no easy way. And so I'm not sure that you can sort of say this is going to work out for one of these teams. You know, in fact, it wouldn't be, you know, would it be that big a stretch to say we may not see either Detroit or Pittsburgh in the final next year?
Oh, yeah, clearly, because nothing is preordained. And again, for Detroit and Pittsburgh to both battle back, they had to overcome tremendous odds. As you're in Montreal for this weekend's entry draft event there's been some speculation in recent days that the Islanders might not do the chalk move that everybody's saying. Everybody's had John Tavares penciled in as number one since about this time last year. What we're hearing right now, is it just a smokescreen? Do the Islanders, are they still going to do the obvious thing and what I think most people would think is the smart thing? Or could either of the other two guys, Duchesne or Hedman, potentially be in play?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that any of those three players you mentioned, Tavares, Duchesne, and Hedman, any one of them could be wearing an Islander jersey at about 8 o'clock on Friday night, and I don't think it would be a huge surprise. I know a lot of Islander fans are believing that there is only one decision, that it should be John Tavares, given the state of the franchise and the need for a marquee player. But you know what? You know, Gar Snow is not looking at it that way. He's not looking at it, how can I please my fans? He's looking big picture in 3 years down the road when this Islander team maybe is getting into a new building or things are looking ahead with that Lighthouse project. You know, what is the best for this team long term? And I'm not sure, I've talked to GMs and owners and scouts, and there is no consensus. You know, you can talk, and it depends on your needs. The Islanders' needs are so widespread that you need a top-end goal scorer. You need a top-end, sort of two-way player, the guy that maybe Duchesne maybe fits that Mike Richards, all-around, tough, gritty, talented player mold, or Hedman. A lot of people believe him to be, that kind of franchise defenseman that, for instance, Kenny Holland in Detroit, he built championship teams around Nick Lidstrom, teams who have had players like Scott Niedermayer and Chris Pronger. Hedman could be that kind of player. So, I think it's going to be part of the great drama of Friday night, because I honestly didn't, I don't know that there's anyone outside of Gar Snow and his closest scouting/management confidants who really know which way they're going to go.
Well, that is very intriguing. If there is that much drama still in the process here, if that's potentially not just a media smokescreen. What I wonder about also, too, one of the things I referenced before is that you've written some columns looking ahead to some of the Olympic teams for next year, and what I think is just going to be an awesome tournament in Vancouver within the framework of the Olympics. Team USA and Canada in particular, I've read some of your columns on. What do you think are some of the more interesting decisions that are going to be left to be made? One would think Canadian goaltender would have to be towards the top of the list, but what do you think are going to be some of the key decisions that are going to be made by the different Olympic committees between now and next February?
Well, I mean, I think, I think the goaltending situation for Team Canada is going to be, wildly compelling to look at between now and next February. I mean, with all due respect to Martin Brodeur and Roberto Luongo, given Brodeur's recent playoff history and his age, given Roberto Luongo's rather limited experience, both internationally and in NHL playoffs, and frankly, the way that the Canucks season ended so abysmally against Chicago, those are the guys that it's still probably going to be, Luongo, Brodeur, and then pick your third goaltender. But I'll tell you, what was once an unassailable strength of the Canadian Olympic team, I'm not sure is necessarily the case anymore. And I don't know whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury or Chris Osgood or Steve Mason. You could throw six or seven goalies in the hat and say, well, who deserves to be the starting goalie in Canada? And I think you can make a case both for and against any of them. And that's different from a team, like Team USA. To me right now, Steve Thomas is your starter, unless he gets hurt or has some sort of horrific first half. Steve Thomas and Ryan Miller are going to carry the load for Team USA. And that's pretty cut and dried. And it's, so for Team Canada, I think that's going to be an issue. And as it always is at these kinds of events, you've got so much talent, especially up front. Who stays home? Does Vincent LeCavalier make this team? Does Danny Heatley make this team? Does Joe Thornton make this team? And frankly, I think you make a case for all three of those guys to be left off. And, so that's a challenge there. We've had a conversation with Brian Burke recently, and I talked to him as recently as, a day or so ago, and talked about the players who will be invited to the U.S. orientation camp in Chicago in August. And he's saying that people are going to be shocked by the players that he leaves off his list. And I have to believe that he may be talking about guys like Scott Gomez, players who, at the start of last year, you would have assumed would be a given to make that U.S. Olympic team, but had terrible seasons. And there are young, talented hard-working players. And I, you know, emphasize for Brian Burke's style of team, he's going to take a bunch of hard-working, hard-nosed players to Vancouver. And if you, you know, if you're a guy like Scott Gomez and maybe the older guys like Mike Modano and Keith Tkachuk, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to be on that team. But that's, you know, those are going to be great talking points between, you know, when the orientation camp take place later this summer and next February. It's going to be some great drama and a lot of great debate that won't be resolved until the medals are handed out.
Well, it's always great to be able to follow everything that you're writing, covering the big stories on ESPN.com. Scott, we plugged the archive on there where people can find your past columns, as well as covering everything that you've got on a contemporary basis, like what you're going to be writing about this weekend. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug tonight?
No, I just, I think the draft is such a great, you know, there's a great segue from the awards last weekend in Las Vegas to the draft. I mean, you go from recognizing the great players of the past season, and now you start talking about the players of the future and who may make an impact, whether it's next year or 2 or 3 years down the road. I think it's a great segue to the summer, and it's a great way to wrap up the season.
Well, Scott, I'm very appreciative that when our producer grabbed you at the NHL Awards after party last week, that you were agreeable to come on. It's our pleasure. We'd love to have you on again sometime, sir.
Yep, anytime, and just send that great big giant check in the mail, and everything will be great.
Yeah, it's going to bounce like a basketball, but we appreciate it, Scott. Thank you so much, sir.